This is kind of like a copy tip that I can share here is we're testing this kind of stuff and it's working well, but we ask a no question because it's a lot easier for people to ask for a no, even if that's a positive result for you, than to ask for a yes. And so how we'd frame it in your case, James, we might ask something like, is this something that your team is already across? Is this something your team is already doing? So for you, if it's not and you say no, perfect. That is an opportunity for us to help you. But if you come back and say, yeah, okay, no problem at all. Best of luck with all of that.
You know, if you grew up with the ascension model of selling where you're looking to get every yes, 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 no response is something very counterintuitive. I don't think many people would be super proactive and looking after the people who are in their database. They were just constantly looking for someone to walk in the front door. I wonder if that's true of online businesses. They're so obsessed with getting new customers, they forget about the people who already bought from them in the past that they could just send them something useful.
I know it's a common stat, but it's fairly true. It's 7 times easier to sell to a past or existing client than it is to bring on board a new client.
This is James Schramko.
James Schramko here. Welcome back to my podcast. This is episode 1061. I'm chatting with Will Wang today from growthlabswithaz.com. Hey, Will.
Hey, James. Great to be back on.
Yeah, well, look, this is a very usable title today. We're talking about send these emails, get more leads. Self-explanatory?
Yep, hopefully going to make it actionable.
So what have you got for us?
Yeah, so we've been working on a couple of things behind the scenes to really help people go out there and get more leads quickly for their business. You know, coming off the back of last year where it was a bit of a turbulent time, a lot of the clients that we work with as they came on board were like, look, I want to work with you, but how do we make this viable commercially? So we've been testing a lot of things in the background, and there's 3 email sequences that I want to share with people today that they can essentially take, copy, customize, and paste, I kind of call it, and they can get it out for their business in a short amount of time that brings back leads. And, you know, we've tested this and proven this over and over again in a whole bunch of different niches and industries. So love to share the emails and also break down why they work and how people can use it for their own businesses.
So in short, you're a growth marketing expert. You've got your agency. You work with a bunch of different types of clients. And these are the emails that are in your toolbox.
Yep, exactly. So we've actually made it a policy now for when any client signs up with us or uses us as an agency, we send these types of emails before we even, you know, go out to the new market or find new leads. These are the emails we send to try and pay for ourselves as quickly as possible.
All right. So this is the quick wins. What's your first type of email?
Yep. So the first type of email kind of goes back to, you know, psychology or the theory that people who have dealt with you before, who have heard from you before, there's more trust built in, and you're actually a lot more likely to convert a current or past client into a new client, right? Either new services, cross sells. So the first bit is all about, you know, people who have you worked with before going back to them and re-engaging them for more work. So we call it our thinking of you email sequence. And it goes something like this. So for example, if there's a client in the past that we've worked with, I'll reach out and say, hey, Tina, was just thinking about you the other day. And we just completed another project with a client that looks similar and got this result. Was just thinking about you. We're doing a case study for this with this other client. Do you want to know more about it? Do you want to know how we got this result? So pretty straightforward. But what it does is it just re-engages the relationship, but it also brings value back into it. Now, the first 2 sequences I'm going to talk through today, they're kind of based around the same psychology of Dean Jackson's famous 9-word email, but we go a little bit deeper than that because in some markets, people are kind of used to the 9-word email. So it kind of loses its effectiveness a little bit. This takes it into a bit of more personalized territory. And we've just seen that to work better in certain markets.
Well, my understanding of the 9-word email is that it is a very friendly email, just asking people if they're still interested in the result that they had originally reached out for in the first place. Whereas the distinction you're talking about with the thinking about you is the addition of that case study element.
Mm, exactly. So we're leading with something different, right? Because if they heard from you before, you don't want to go back and say, hey, are you still looking for help? Especially if you already helped them. I mean, it just doesn't quite make sense. So it's more about, can we bring fresh ideas and new value and, you know, give them something first before we expect anything in return, right? The whole idea of to have a good friend, you've got to be a good friend. That's kind of what we're using here. So it's typically an email sequence or 2 or 3 that we sent out to previous clients or, you know, previous leads. And each email has a different take or different angle. One might be offering a case study. One might be offering even something that might not have too much to do with your core service. So for example, we send a bunch of cold emails for our clients. But I know that some past clients of ours actually run ads. So when we get credits and coupons from Facebook and Google, right, we go and give them to our clients and it just opens up another conversation. So what value can you give, even if it's maybe you do have some new ideas, what can you share that starts a conversation again with your past clients?
You know, this reminds me of a guy who used to sell umbrellas. There's this guy called Len and he bought a Mercedes-Benz from me. And I used to subscribe to Wheels and Motor Magazine back in the day when magazines were actually a thing. I know they're still around, but barely. And when a new edition would come out and it had the new model, and this is pre-internet, would so do a write-up on the new model of Mercedes-Benz, you know, like a spy picture or it's coming out next year. I would photocopy that and then I would get a post-it note and I'd write on that, "Hey, Len, I saw this article. Let me know if you're interested in chatting about one of these." And then I'd put it into a envelope and I'd mail it to him in the post. So actual lumpy mail, pretty high open rate.
Yep.
But the same idea. So imagine there, Len's there in his umbrella factory, pretty boring, right? He's got his cargo container arriving from China with his umbrellas. He's got his distributors. He's doing his, and then this envelope comes and it's got a picture of a new car that's coming out next year with a post-it note. It's like from James, it's pretty much, "Hey Len, I was thinking of you, thought you might be interested in this." And yeah, he would pick up the phone and say, "Hey, come and pop out. Let's have a coffee. Let's talk about this thing." And that's how I would sell cars before they even arrived, which a lot of the other salespeople didn't figure out. But I don't think many people would be super proactive and looking after the people who were in their database. They were just constantly looking for someone to walk in the front door. I wonder if that's true of online businesses. They're so obsessed with getting new customers, they forget about the people who already bought from them in the past that they could just send them something useful.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really interesting to hear the stories that you get from your background in the car dealerships, because my background before copywriting and having this agency was actually in data and in IT. And I used to analyze, right? I sit there every single day for 8 hours looking for spreadsheets, trying to figure out like where can a business go to have more impact on the bottom line. And I know it's a common stat, but it's fairly true. It's 7 times easier to sell to a past or existing client than it is to bring on board a new client. So it just goes to show you, like, if you can sell them something else that would add value in terms of, you know, if they get more value than paid in pricing, that's a win-win relationship. And it's so, so much easier to sell additional services or products to existing clients than it is to get a new client on board.
Love it. So first one is thinking about you, a case study or something new, information, something valuable, coupons or redeemable credits for a thing they're already using. What's your second email you like to send?
Yep. So the second email is kind of similar to the first one, actually, but it's going out to past leads. So the first email generally sent to past clients, and you can get fancy with actually sending them things directly in the mail, gifts, for example. But the second one is for people or companies that haven't turned into a client. So you've had great calls with them, you know, you understand their pains, what they're looking for, but they just, for some reason or another, whether it was timing, whether it was budget, whether just the people in the business weren't ready, like whatever reason it was, they didn't come on board and turn into a client. So those are really, really good people because they already know you and kind of have some level of trust or authority, right? Unless they've just seen what you propose and said, "Look, this is completely wrong." There's generally a reason that's not on you why they weren't able to go through and work with you. So the second email sequence is closer to the original Nightwood email and it goes back to those people. Now, this is dependent upon the reasoning you've got in your CRM. So hopefully, as you've been going through and making sales or losing sales, both, you've got notes on like why it did or didn't happen. So for example, if someone said to you, "Hey, it's just not the right timing. We've got this other major project that's wrapping up at the moment and we can't do anything until it's done." Well, now you've got a really good excuse or reason really to go back and say, "Hey, from my records, it looks like the project's probably done. Was actually thinking about you the other day as I was talking to another business that looks similar. Is this a better time? There's been a couple of changes that you should be aware of that I think could make this even better for you."
Right.
Right.
So you're drawing on your CRM system. You've taken notes. Mm. I used to do the exact same thing. Pre-computers, almost, we had a piece of paper, a write-up sheet for everyone that walked in the door. And I'd write down, I'd add a log of each contact. And I was taught to do a little bit of a summary too. It's like, be quite specific. "Hey, Will, I've got a note here. Back in March, you came in and you test drove the new SLK, which you liked. And you told me that it wasn't time yet for your lease to come up. And you said that would be happening around winter. And then we had a little chat when you popped in for your last service, when you were servicing your wife's car, and you said you're getting closer. Well, guess what? Now's probably a good time to be talking about that SLK that we looked at last time. And then I would shut up. But that's hyper relevant. You're speaking to one person, you know their exact situation. It's not a template or cut and paste thing. I think this is really where you, every time we talk, this is a message that comes through, but maybe some people miss because everyone wants to scale and leverage and systemize and automate this, but you have to have something extremely personable or identifiable or specific to that client is what I'm picking up.
Yeah, exactly. And especially if your clients are worth a lot of money to you, right? If they're worth $5,000, $10,000 a year, I mean, it's worth putting in the time and effort to go and personally speak to them or send them an email. And there are ways to scale it. I mean, you know, you can hire people to scale this for you and with you. It doesn't mean that...
Can we hire you to do it?
Well, absolutely. Well, the CRM part is kind of difficult because that obviously comes from the sale, but there's easy ways to have a good CRM system. Yeah. Once you've got the CRM system, we actually do these for clients, right? We step in and read the CRM and say, hey, where did the sales conversation leave off? What happened here? Did they ghost you? Did something happen? Do you have an objection? And then we can craft the message for you. But obviously that first part of having the sales conversation is very important. And so one hack that I've kind of got that hopefully might help people out there is, for me, a lot of my sales calls are done over Zoom or on the phone. So one of the things that I do is I have iPad and an iPad pencil. And for every sales conversation I've got an app called Notability, I think it is. And I'll start a new file with for every single sales call. And as soon as I'm done the sales call, I'll hit upload and share it onto a Slack channel where my team will go and put the notes into our CRM for me. So that makes it more efficient. But when we come back and want to re-engage, I've got all the notes in. I can refer back to everything we spoke about. So that's just a small hack. And it makes such a big difference in terms of knowing the objection of why they didn't go through, because in your next emails back to them in this sequence, you can directly tackle the number one objection that stopped them from coming on board in the first place.
Well, a couple of things on that. One, by the way, there are apps now that can attend webinars and send you the notes afterwards automatically, which I'm sure can synchronize with CRM, which is cool. Two, I always open up notes and make notes. Every single coaching call I've ever done, I've got notes forever, which one day I'd like to load into a bot and have it be me. The third thing is, let's say the ultimate objection, like in my case, if I was dealing with someone, I was at Mercedes-Benz, occasionally, you know, a misguided customer would place an order with a competitor. They buy a Jaguar, right? They think that's the perfect out. You call them up, sorry, James, I've bought a Jaguar, And I'd say, well, thank you for letting me know. I appreciate that. And I'll be in touch with you when it's time for the next one. And they'd laugh it off. Okay, yeah, you do that. But I would actually follow them up and I'd look at my notes. Hey there, Will. I'm just looking at my notes here. It was about 2 years ago you purchased a Jaguar. I'm just wondering how that went for you and if you're ready for a change. And you say, oh my God, I hate the thing. I should have bought two because it's always in the workshop. The headroom sucks. It's turned out to be not everything I'd hoped for. I am interested in having a chat to you about it. And I don't know anyone who would follow up lost sales like that, where they literally bought the competitor's car, because I know who's not following them up, the Jaguar salesperson. Mm. He's not following them up. And I can't stress this enough. Follow-up is a lost art.
Yeah.
Even people following up a prospect who hasn't yet bought from them when they expressed an interest to buy is still like an actual surprise if someone follows you up. I ordered a belt from a local surf shop here, and I've been into that shop a few times to see if it's arrived. They've taken my number. They said they'll call me when it comes. It's been 6 months, no phone call and no belt. And I'll tell you what, I'm not going to go in there and chase their ass up to try and sell me the belt, because I've bought two belts from someone else in the meantime, right as I travel. So if you can't even get followed up from people you're trying to buy from, imagine getting followed up from someone where you bought the competitor's stuff. I mean, it's amazing and rare, but you have to have the note in your file. So be a good note taker, be very specific. I like this. So you can do the spin on the nine word. Hey, last time this happened, how are things placed now? And that's great, but you have to have the information.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I've got an example just from last week. where we had a sales call with a lead of ours, you know, back in November or December, and they decided to go with someone else to try and do LinkedIn automation and an outreach with LinkedIn. And so I showed them a quick email, and literally just like, you know, what we've been saying, I said, "Hey, how's the LinkedIn outreach going? Was thinking about you the other day. Hope you're getting a bunch of leads back." And immediately came back and said, "Well, that was an absolute flop. Can we work with you? Like, can we come back on board with you?" So that, you know, some kind of variation of that, just understanding. It's like the way I think about it, it's a mindset of caring for the people that you might actually work with. So if you have that kind of mindset, you know, people often get confused. Oh, am I annoying people? Like, no, you're just really trying to look out for people and trying to have their best interests at heart. And so even if they come back and say, "Oh, actually really happy with it, still all good, I'll get back to you." Cool, no problem. That's no worries at all. But chances are, people out there aren't, you know, service providers sometimes don't do the best job, or they're not the right client, or not the right perfect fit. So if someone hasn't gone with you in the past, chances are now could actually be a better time. But they're not waking up in the morning thinking about you. They're thinking about their own business. But if you can just get back and have another conversation, they'll now understand with more knowledge and context of why something else didn't work, why your product or service is actually a better fit.
And there's a chance that the person probably won't come back to you, maybe because of pride. They might be embarrassed or feel like, you know, you'll judge them for having made a mistake. So reaching out to them is sort of a nice way to say, "Hey, it's okay." You know, it happens. It's always been interesting to me when people come back after leaving for a while and they come back. And I've since come up with the concept that some of the service we provide is seasonal. Sometimes people need us. They might have a time where they don't need us, and then they're ready again to want to engage again. So it's always good to have an open bridge. When someone says no, don't incinerate them just because you're upset or hurt that they didn't want to buy from you. Just accept it, make a note in your CRM. What happens, Will, when you come in to work with a client and you want to use this email, but you don't have a lot of information about the prospect or what happened last time?
Yeah, so in that case, what we tend to do is go and do a segmentation exercise, because chances are on an email list, it's, you know, different services or different types of businesses that are on there. And we work mostly in the B2B space, so it's a pretty fair assumption to make that, you know, there's different classifications on the list itself. And we actually go into a hand-raising exercise. So we can go back and say something like, you know, "Hey, we spoke about a year ago in terms of helping you with X or Y service. Just wanted to ask a quick favor and get a sense of where you're up to at the moment. Did you find a solution for Y problem, or is there another problem that's taken over and top of mind for you now?" So if you don't know exactly what happened or why something didn't happen, we just start with questions and really start a conversation is what we're trying to do.
Yeah, so just you're looking for a this or that alternate choice response. They pick one. Hopefully you get a response and then you work from there.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice one. So what's the third type of campaign that you have?
Yeah, so the third type, I mean, the first two we spoke about, going back to previous clients and previous leads. The third type is really about going back out to market. So this is when you've already tapped and nurtured your audience and you don't think you can go back and get more leads from it. Now we need to look outside of our immediate field of influence. So this is when we look at, you know, what's a really, really easy offer or foot in the door kind of sales process that can help us start conversations, maybe even if it's not a full service sale. So what I mean by that, over the past 12 months, as we kind of mentioned, it's, you know, I've seen the market fluctuate quite a bit in terms of like the amount of trust needed to close a sale. And this is obviously in a very B2B context because B2C is a little bit different, but there's a little bit more trust that's needed. People are a little bit more careful with how they spend their money and how they invest. And the buying behavior has changed a lot. So one of the things that we've seen to get leads through quickly is the idea of breaking down your services into a really easy to say yes to product or service. And I'll use my own company as an example. So when we work with clients, you know, some of our bigger corporate clients just want us to do all of the lead generation. We're almost like a fractional part of their company, right? We're a fractional marketing organization. And so some of these companies would go and pay us multiple five figures a month to run everything like that. But when the budgets are getting restricted, when there's budgetary freezes and people aren't allowed to spend the money they were, it's hard to get in the door and have a CFO sign off on like 20 grand a month spent. So what we learned was if we have a smaller ticket item, whether it's, you know, $50, $100, $1,000, that gets your foot in the door and starts a relationship and makes it an easy yes, where people don't have to go and think about the purchase, you know, in place, and they can really easily say yes. So You know, some examples of how this sequence would work is this is actually for someone that we both know, James, where if you have a podcasting service, as an example, you can go to an author and say, hey, can I take some of the ideas you spoke about in your book and turn it into a podcast for you? Right? A very easy thing to say yes to, because they don't have to put extra effort or time in. They've already got the materials and it's just a matter of an easy yes. Another idea is if someone's already investing in videos, can you go and say, hey, you've got these amazing videos. Can I cut them up and turn them into reels for you? Again, it could be a low ticket service. It could be a trial or some kind of offer where it's very easy to say yes to, but also very easy for you to deliver. And all it does is it just really opens up the door to an easy conversation. It's an offer that, you know, people, you know, to use a phrase that I'm not particularly, that I don't particularly love, but people will feel stupid saying no to the offer. But it's just one of those kind of things where can you go out and not even have a phone call with a lead, but start a conversation, start a relationship either way.
Yeah, I've seen examples of that. People send me stuff saying, hey, I notice you have a podcast. Would you like us to create a tool that takes all of the podcast episodes and allows your users to search via keywords, etc.? I like your example of how you make videos, we make shorts, you're an author, would you like a course, these sort of things. So you have a prerequisite that is your North Star that the prospect must have that allows you to have a very relevant conversation around that. Plus, you must also be able to demonstrate where you've done it for other people and have great case studies of the exact same thing that person might be interested in doing.
Mm. Yep, exactly. So you don't want to go to market with a brand new thing that you've never figured out, because you might under or oversell it. But if you've tested this with a couple of existing clients, for example, or if you've put it out to your warm network, right, people who would cut you some slack if it's not quite there, or if it's too much, you can always come back and say, hey, actually, I promised too much in here. Start testing with your warm network. But once you find an offer that just really, really clicks, like when you put it in front of people, they just go, wow, this is amazing. And it's also low cost of delivery, low lag in terms of actually getting it done, but people really value it. That's a really good time to take it and just go and get a bunch of new leads for it.
So you want to be in a position where you say, because you have this, we suggest you have a look at that.
Mm.
And I always like to reverse engineer my existing clients. What are the patterns? What are the trends? What have I noticed? A lot of my clients have a book. A lot of my clients have a podcast or show. A lot of my clients have a team of 5 or 6 people. A lot of my clients are agency or info services, some of them software, a couple of e-commerce. So that there are some patterns that help me recognize who a good client is, so I could build a campaign around that core thing. Love it. How hard is it to actually write these emails? Because lately I've been reviewing the emails that my clients send in response to people trying to buy from them, and some of them are really terrible. Like if you wanted someone to not buy from you, you would send some of these emails. I'm helping them. I'm saving them from this. And it seems like really good email writing skills are not a common skill.
Yeah. And I think even on top of that, being able to write a good cold email is, again, it's one of those things that it's really hard to, there's not a lot of good information on courses about that because it is so niche and specific. But I'll drop some tips and I'll even share some templates on here that could help people. So when I think about, you know, going out cold, right, and getting leads quickly back as quickly as possible, people sometimes think it's more about the email itself and the skill of the copywriter. And it is to an extent, but it really is all about thinking about the business and sales process holistically, especially in terms of the offer of the cold email. So when people hear that, they think, okay, great, let me talk about myself and my business and what we can do and how much it is and trying to sell on the email itself. But the cold email play isn't really about that. So for this sequence that we're talking about, where you can send it really quickly and, you know, get leads back really, really quickly as well from it, the formula that we seem to work is, one, start with personalization. And personalization not just being like, hey, first name, hey, company name. Personalization being the research you put into why it's relevant. So in the particular example of the podcasting service, we'd go through and say, hey, we listened to your podcast episode about this certain topic, really like how you spoke about this thing. So, you know, it's simple and straightforward, but it's not easy to do. But if you can do it well, you know, there's a lot of value because you really do actually understand, is this person the right fit for us? Will they care or not about the service? So the first bit is personalization. Actually show that you've done the research. The second bit is just like a really quick offer that has a super easy benefit for them to say yes to. So in the example of the podcast service, it could be something like, could I just take one of your episodes and cut it up into a couple of highlight points? By the way, just want to get your feedback on it. I'm not going to charge you anything for it. Just let me know if this is something that will be valuable to you, right? So then you've got one liner for the value that's very clear. It's not, I'm going to grow your podcast. It's, I'm going to take one episode and cut it into three snippets. And then we've got to ask, hey, would this be valuable? Do you even care about this? So it's personalization, one line value, one easy offer, and then go ahead, yes or no.
And what would be the difference between that and just going ahead and doing the thing and sending them that? Like, quite often I'll get video reviews of my website or how crap my socials are or whatever from people. I get a lot of the emails you just described. Like, I get dozens of them every single day, maybe because I'm a podcaster or I have a channel.
Yep.
Exact same thing. I loved your episode with Will Wang. I loved how he talked about sending three emails. Hey, have you ever thought about, and that's where they pitch, running Facebook ads to your campaign. Let us know if you want us to do an account audit for you or whatever. Hit reply.
Yep.
What's the difference between that versus actually doing the thing?
Yeah. So the difference is there's two sides to look at it. And this is where we split test a lot, right? In some markets, if the thing takes a lot of effort to do, for example, if, and it goes back to the offer.
An SEO audit. That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Like an hour and a half.
Exactly. And there's a risk to the audits. For example, Facebook ads audit, SEO audit, there's a risk of the person having the audit done on that they've got to share data with you. They've got to share private information. And yes, there's NDAs, but I mean, the NDAs aren't worth the paper that they're printed on, right? So there's a lot of trust issue that you've got to overcome with an email like that. So first and foremost, I go back and look at the offer because that's actually not an easy offer to say yes to because it means they've got to put in time and effort and give you data that, you know, the world doesn't have. So that's probably one of the things why I don't like the idea of starting with an audit. It's just too much too soon.
Good point. I mean, you could just be a competitor fishing for information.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of risk.
Like, tell me all your best clients, all your keywords that convert, you know, we'll do it all for free.
Yeah.
It's not a good deal, is it?
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of the first side to it. You know, I mean, in some industries, it can work. We've seen it in a few industries, you know, where they're not as sophisticated, i.e. the marketing isn't as strong for competitors. So it doesn't quite matter as much, or they're just starting out. So, you know, there's not a lot of things at risk or they've got a lot of time. But the markets we're typically getting our clients into, that's not the case at all. So the reason why the approach that we've got works over, you know, the emails that you get is because we have an offer that's super easy to say yes to that doesn't require their privacy or data or much time or effort on their side. So it really is just a no-brainer offer, right? It's like, well, I'm going to get all these benefits without having to sacrifice time, put money into it, give you my data, all of this kind of stuff.
My friction is when they say, oh, can we edit a couple of your clips for you and send it over? I think, well, even if it's free and even if they're doing it for feedback, they are going to just pitch me on doing an editing service, which I don't want or need because I have my own team. I'd rather invest in training them better.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's my resistance. But I feel like I may not be representative of most of the prospects of most of your clients because I'm just too aware of this stuff. And it's probably some of the, you know, if you're dealing with finance companies or insurance companies or other types of less internet marketing type companies, maybe this stuff still works really well. That's really my, I wanted to express that on behalf of the other people like me who are just getting bombarded with something similar, but not good.
Yeah. And that's kind of where the last line of what we typically send comes into it, because rather than just doing this and spamming people with stuff they don't want and having, you know, the time and effort from your side to do it, we actually ask them if this is something or if there is a need for this kind of thing. And the way that we do it, and this is kind of like a copy tip that I can share here, is we're testing this kind of stuff and it's working well, but we ask a no question because it's a lot easier for people to ask for a no, even if that's a positive result for you, than to ask for a yes. All right. And so how we'd frame it in your case, James, if we were to be sending these emails, we might ask something like, is this something that your team is already over, you know, across? Is this something that your team is already doing? So for you, if it's not and you say no, perfect. That is an opportunity for us to help you. But if you come back and say, yeah, it actually is. My team are doing this. Okay, no problem at all. I can see that, you know, it's competing against your team. No problem. Best of luck with all of that. So that's kind of the last line of the email and why, you know, we see such good responses is because we, instead of just pushing our stuff, it's more permission-based marketing. Say, hey, have you already got a solution? Because if not, we can talk, right? No is actually positive. But if you do, that's no skin off our teeth. We're just asking you person to person, like we're having a real conversation, if there's value in sharing this.
For me, that's the most interesting thing we've spoken about. eliciting a no response is something very counterintuitive.
Mm.
You know, if you grew up with the ascension model of selling where you're looking to get every yes, 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 you know, like the door-to-door encyclopedia salesman. Hello, do you live here? Mm. Yes. Right. Do you read? Yes. Would you like your children to have the greatest education possible? Yes. You know, so they're trying to get seven or eight yeses till finally the last yes is magically going to just tip over the line. Very interesting, Will. So you mentioned that you have some templates. Are we able to access those?
Yeah, 100%. So if everyone listening wants the templates and some training around how it's been used and some examples, shoot me an email to info@growthlabswithaz.com. And I can give you all the details on how to get it, templates and also some other bonuses I'll throw in there for listeners as well.
And so are they actually free or not?
Yeah, so there's a cost to the copy templates and the training because we've actually put a lot of time and effort and energy into not just giving you the templates, but helping you to understand where it's going to be useful, how you can use it in your business and how to get the most out of it. So there is a cost, but the cost is, again, quite low. It's $29. But if you shoot me an email through and let me know you've come from the podcast, I'll give you a discount code, which will take it down to something like $9 or $10, which for the templates that you're going to get, the returns are going to be astronomical, hopefully.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Will. Appreciate that. Just a quick recap. We've been talking to Will Wang from growthlabswithaz.com about how you can send out email campaigns to get more leads. One of them is for people who have bought from you before. One of them is for people who have indicated they might be interested in buying from you but haven't bought. The other one is cold outreach for the people who are most likely to be a perfect prospect for you. Will's been doing this for his own agency all day, every day, and now he's making these templates available for you at a very low cost. Just send him an email, info@growthlabswithaz.com, and say you're listening to podcast 1061 and you want to get access to these templates. Thanks so much.
Thanks, James.
This is James Schramko.